last week.
What?
Yeah.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 104 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, January the 18th, 2008, so if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., on a Friday, that is January the 18th, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and talk to myself and to the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304. 658-3333, that's area code 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, so if you'd like to participate that way, you're welcome to. I do try to check the email during the breaks. We've had an interesting week, have we not? Some interesting things have gone on with the Benny Hinn thing last night, and my goodness, I've had a ball this week. But anyway, getting back to the intro, the show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests. You'll find links to the guests' websites. You'll find links to the audio archives from the past shows, and you'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. There are lots of people in the chat room. You'll find links there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, also to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find the donate button there to help keep the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network on the air. As I've said before, the funds that go into the PayPal account are not used for our salaries. All of the hosts are strictly self-supporting through their own contributions. It goes to keep the streamers streaming and the packets packing and the cassettes turning and the CDs spinning and all of the things that we do to make this show. You'll also find on the Head-On Radio Network main site the other progressive programming on the network. There are many wonderful hosts on the network. As far away as Australia, I am only a small portion of Strictly Confidential. Strictly Confidential is a small portion, rather, of Head-On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. So you'll find all of that at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And moving right along, we have a wonderful guest this evening. I'm delighted to have this man with us. I've been talking about it, actually, for the last two or three days on the show. I've mentioned it Wednesday evening, I believe. I mentioned it Thursday evening, and we have firmed up the date for this evening. The fellow that is going to be joining us just shortly is Mr. Ronnie Kerr. Ronnie is a native of New Jersey, and he got his first break in action films like Absolute Aggression, and he moved on to Los Angeles, where he played in a list of movies longer than my arm. One of those films that he was the lead role in, and the movie was called Regarding Billy. He played Billy. Now, as I've said over the last few nights, that's probably it's a dear, sweet, engaging film, and it's honest, it's wistful, it's actually very touching. In fact, I called myself doing show prep this morning. You know, we do a lot of looking up and referencing to before we try to go on the air. So I called myself doing show prep this morning and found an excuse to be able to watch Regarding Billy again this morning. And again, it moved me to tears. So, Roddy, even before you come on the air, you've already made me cry today, all right? Ronnie is also an athletic director. He's a tennis pro, an aquatic director. He's been at Southwestern Oklahoma State University. That's where he went to school. He's a boxer. He's on the cover of Superheroes Closet. He's owned a fitness company. He is certified by the American Council on Exercise, the National Academy of Sports Medicine, Aerobics and Fitness Association of America, the Apex Fitness Group. His TV credits include Ladies Man, NYPD Blue, Sister Sister, the Lifetime Channel's Merge, where he played the Carpenter. Films include Sinful, The 49th Line, Regarding Billy, which is one of my all-time favorites, The Aviator. The list goes on and on and on. So without any further ado, Ronnie Kerr, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
It's good to have you here. Ronnie, first, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can definitely hear you quite well.
Excellent, and you're coming through fine, too. If there's any problem, the studio can make adjustments. Ronnie, I was thrilled to hear from you. I have a MySpace page up. Most of the listeners know there's a MySpace page for Strictly Confidential Radio, and I had listed my three favorite movies there. I don't have a favorite. There are three favorites, and one of them is Regarding Billy. And then when you contacted me, we became friends. We sent the friend exchange or however that works on MySpace. And I was just delighted that you're willing to come on the show. What a find.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. I actually I deleted my MySpace page for a while. It was, honestly, it was overwhelming, and you know how it is. You just get so many emails, and it was almost more frustrating for me not to be able to answer every email that came in. And I was going to get out of the business, but it never works out that way, does it?
Things never, the longer I live, Ronnie, I have to tell you, the more unexpected life becomes. Ronnie, you've done so many things that it would be hard for anyone to wrap their head around all of it unless we probably start from the beginning. Apparently, you were in the very early years of Ronnie, you were a tennis pro. How did that work? Tell us about that, Ronnie.
I was a tennis pro. I actually started playing tennis when I was five. And my mom was, when we grew up in Jersey, my mom was a maid for a well-to-do family called the Mindells. Richard Mindell actually had just graduated college from Berkeley. I mean, I'm 33, so this was, you know, a while ago. And he used to make me play tennis, and it just sort of took off, and I kept playing, and I did well for myself and got a scholarship to college and was All-American 2 years in a row, but then I snapped my ankle on tour, so that was sort of the end of that. And as far as doing all those jobs, I think if you talk to any actor out there, every actor I know definitely has done everything under the sun. You just try and support yourself while you're trying to work, and you're always hoping to find something else that you're passionate about because, you know, in acting there's no guarantees. So, yeah, I'm definitely not the only one in that regard, for sure.
Well, that must have been a terrible setback for you when you first broke your ankle. At the time of your injury, had you already considered a career in personal training or acting? Was this something that had ever occurred to you, or did you figure this out after the injury?
Well, I think every little kid wants to be famous, if you will, as an actor, but, you know, there's so much luck that goes into it and timing and the right opportunity. Personal training never entered into it. You know, as a kid, I always thought I was going to play tennis. There really was no backup plan. I mean, my teachers asked, well, what are you going to do if tennis didn't work out? And I always just thought, well, what do you mean if tennis doesn't work out? Of course it will.
So then you moved after your ankle healed up. Did you go to some sort of an acting school? Because I have to tell you, Ronnie, the character you played in Regarding Billy was an exquisite performance. I realize, you know, there's so many times people don't differentiate between the individual, meaning Ronnie Kerr, and the parts that they play in films, and we run into that. And, you know, doing what I do from time to time, people assume you're just like you are on the air all the time. You really can't be that way all the time. But Ronnie, you were an exquisite actor. Tell us about your training. Did you take training? How did you come to do that so well?
I actually didn't train. I was living in New Jersey, and my first agent's name was Justine Pagesella. I'll never forget her. She really helped me out a lot. And there was a casting call for an action film, and it basically said you needed to know extensive martial arts and know how to do all this stuff. So I went on the internet and I looked up every martial arts I could find, and I put it on my resume and said I did it. And of course, I didn't do a one. And when I actually got called in for an audition, it was my first audition. And the first person I met with was the stunt coordinator, and they were like, oh, you have to, show us what you can do. I had my whole leg bandaged up in an ACE bandage because I knew they were going to make us do it. So I told them that I obviously can't do anything. My leg is all beat up, which was a lie. And
that's
so
incredibly
I think
crafty.
It was for entertainment, so they could laugh at me. They sent me in to the next room, and this was my first audition ever, so I walked in, and it was just a whole panel of people. It was the producer, the casting director, two assistants, and the director. And the director's name was John Christian Invorgsen, who has done just a ton of, like, direct-to-DVD movies. But, when it's your first time, you're nervous, and in my mind, he looked like Kevin Costner. So I sort of flipped out, and I was like, oh, my God, Kevin Costner, I'm a huge fan, and he looked at me like I was a crazy person and said, well, I'm not Kevin Costner. And I was like, I know you're not, but I love you, Kevin Costner. You're awesome. So they're all having a good laugh at my expense, and they just happened to be reading my resume, and it said that I spoke German on there. And my mom was actually born and raised in Germany, so they asked me to translate something on the spot, and I did. And I wound up getting this little tiny part with them, which was just two words. And it was just the coolest experience ever. So that's how actually got my first break, was lying.
Well, that shows amazing creativity. You went for it and you got it. So all's fair in getting a job. And where was this? Was this in New York, the New York area when that happened?
It was. It was in New York, yeah.
That's amazing. So that film was called Absolute Aggression, was it?
I think it was called Cyber Vengeance. That was my first film that I ever did.
And tell us about how you ended up in California. Had you done more theater and movies in New York before moving on?
I did. I did. I had such a good relationship with Chris, and he directed me in that he brought me back for a second and a third film, and we really just hit it off. And I was doing a bunch of plays in New York, which nobody went and saw. And then you get better agents with each one, and I wound up getting a part on a soap opera out in L.A. on Days of Our Lives, and it was just a little two-day part. So I decided that was it. I was going to go out there, and I was going to stay. So that was, how I wound up going out there. And I stayed.
Well, Ronnie, that's amazing that you were able to finesse all of that stuff coming from a tennis injury. That you're apparently a pretty smart guy to pull all that off.
Like I said, though, it's definitely there's a lot of luck to be had in it as well. It's timing and perseverance. I read this great quote by Sheryl Crow, and she said that anyone in entertainment needs to know that it's only 25% talent and 75% persistence, and she's definitely right. I mean, I look at so many movies now, and I'm like, oh, I read for that one. And people don't realize you can have a big resume, but for as many movies as you've done, you've probably auditioned for 50 times that amount.
Well, let me ask you this, Ronnie. Are there other movies that I have missed? I realize you've had parts in a list of movies longer than my arm. As I said a couple of times, I really do mean that. But regarding lead roles, are there other movies that I'm missing, aside from Regarding Billy, which of course is wonderful, that I have missed that I would probably like to see?
Well, Love Life played at so many of the gay and lesbian film festivals. was it last, the year before last, and that was directed by Damien Deeks, who has done a bunch of other films. So that did really, really well. And then I think the other really big film I did was a film called Sinful, and it was directed by Michael Caine, and it's based on a true story about this woman who's played by a girl named Erin Brown, and I played her husband, and it's basically about this couple who cannot have a child, and she murders X amount of women trying to take the baby out of the womb, and that, I mean, it's quite the opposite of regarding Billy, actually, where...
Yeah,
Billy's,
I'd say that's the other end of the spectrum.
A bit of a sadder movie, where Sinful is a bit more gore, so if you like thrillers and gory, you would definitely get into that one.
Well, tell us about how you got involved with Regarding Billy. Did you answer an ad to read for a part? How did that work? It was built for you. The movie was just made for you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really nice. Actually, it's directed by a guy named Jeff London, and just like any movie, there's a thing called the breakdowns that go out every day that says, you know, Billy, age whatever, 20 to 30, white male, works on a fishing dock, and, you know, the agents send all their actors' pictures in who they want, you know, they think should play it, and the director, the producer, the casting director looks through and calls people in. And at the time, I wasn't out. I wasn't in the closet, but I just wasn't really making a political statement about it. I just didn't think it was relevant. And so I went in and I read, and the biggest problem that the director said he was having was finding guys who could cry on cue, because if you've seen the movie, there's a bit of a... bit of crying.
Well, there are tears, and they're all very touching. It's one of the amazing characteristics of both you and Jason. Jason is the person who plays opposite you, are both able to do that. Now, Jason, not as much. Jason, not nearly as much. And so you can cry on cue, can you?
I can, yeah. Well, Jason's amazing. They had the car pick us. Normally, though, like, we shot that up in Pismo Beach, California, I think in January of 2005, and they together. So we had, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours to bond in the car, and we just hit it off. And Jason is straight. He actually just got married. He's still one of my really good buds, but I met him on that shoot. And I remember... we were just talking, you know, the whole time shooting. The kiss was one of our last scenes to shoot, and I just don't know who was more nervous, like myself or him, when we went in for the kiss. So sorry if you haven't seen the movie, anybody listening, but they do kiss.
Well, you have anticipated my question. I was going to ask you somewhere in the queue what it was like to kiss Jason. So what was it like to kiss Jason?
Well,
it looked like hell of a kiss.
Yeah, Jason knows. We both gave a lot of interviews in the past on that kiss, because there was tongue. It was we kept talking, you know, oh, I wonder how the kiss is gonna be, oh, we're nervous, and we just said it'll be what it'll be, and we asked Jeff to please do our close up on our first take, because we don't know what's going to happen, and it's quite, I've kissed a lot of people in film, and that was my first one that was, like, tongue and real. You know, normally you have, like, movie kiss, but this one was all out, so I have to give him a lot of credit, because I think we were both pretty much pissing ourselves during the take and drinking tequila beforehand.
Well, that's amazing. I would have never known that. It seemed to me that you both were able to personalize the roles, along with Jack Sway, by the way, who played your little brother. It seemed that you all had the role more than just in your head. It seemed that you were all made perfectly for that movie.
Yeah, casting was that was a long process for that film. I went in for 7 different auditions, and I actually had to come out to Jeff London, because I think it was at my last audition, he kept, you know, telling me, you have to realize there's a kiss and this is a gay character. And so finally I had to tell him, I had to pull him aside at one of my castings and say, hey, I know it's a gay character and I am gay. And one of the reasons I wanted that role really, really badly because when I read the script, there's so many gay scripts out there, and I think a lot of them are decent, they're nice, but it's always about nudity and sex and hooking up, and this was one of the first scripts I ever read that had none of that in there. You know, it's just about, you know, love and heartbreak and, you know, all that romantic stuff that you see in, you know, in straight romantic comedies. So, you know, it was just like, I mean, we were shooting like around the same time as Brokeback Mountain, which was also just like an amazing film. So it's just, you know, you, as an actor, you want to play those roles. You don't always want to have to take off your shirt and flex and be the pretty boy. Like sometimes it's nice to get like a meaty role. And I think that was the difference between Regarding Billy and so many, you know, other films out there. And I know all three of us, myself, Jason, and Jack, we all had turned down other projects in order to do that because in L.A. there's a thing called pilot season, which is when all the new television shows are made, and we all turned down different projects just to do that film, which, you know, of course, that film is not without its flaws as well, but it's just the heart of that story is really, really nice, and I liked it.
Ronnie, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, one of the things I've said over the last couple of nights in talking about your coming on the show, I have to admit that, and the listeners already know that I have exhibited some excitement about it. But in any case, one of the things that attracts me to that movie so deeply is that it is not pornography in any way, shape, matter, or form. There's no shirts off, love scene lying down. There's the kiss. But that's vertical and close, and it was a part of the story. It was deeply touching, and I think as gay people, we've spent our whole lives seeing the movie industry churn out pornography and at least close to pornography. And it was just stunning to me. That was one of the major attractions. I couldn't agree with you more. Nonetheless, we see, you know, comments about the movie. You know, people say, you know, boy, those actors were hot, but there was no sex scene. And don't you find that? I just find that kind of disgusting. It's like as if they missed the whole point of the movie.
Well, you know, you find with that movie, I think if you read any of the reviews, people have very strong opinions about it. People will either rate that as one of their all-time, you know, like you did, you know, top favorite movies ever because you're willing to overlook some of the flaws that the movie has because it's just such a sweet, you know, touching story. And I think most people over 30, when they start to have a better grasp of, you know, the important things in life, they say, oh my God, just, you know, I can relate to that. I mean, I've gotten more fan letters and thank you notes from doing that film than all of my other work that I've ever done. So there's definitely something to be said for it. You know, I think for the longest time, the only way to get like a, you know, a gay themed film financed was to, you know, promise that there was going to be some skin going on, and you know, this was one of the first of its kind to say, hey, we don't have to do that. You see, like. And that's why I think you didn't see for the longest time as much lesbian cinema, because you can even look at it now. Look at the difference between Queer as Folk and the L Word, and Queer as Folk still has so much, you know, has so much gratuitous nudity, whereas the L Word doesn't have nearly that much. You know, it's different, but I think it's why, you know, there's a lot more gay films out there than, say, lesbian films. You know, and Queer as Folk is great. I mean, my friend Robert was on that for quite a while. So, you know, I think it was a good quality show, but it's really tough to make the films where there's not the sex scenes in it. And I think now filmmakers are just starting to get the courage to try it. And I think that's the one thing I have to give Jeff London. He was really you know, one of the first ones to do that, to make a, you know, a full length feature without it. I think the young people that watch the film, there are a couple hopeless romantics out there, and I'm excited that they watched it. But, you know, sex sells in all mediums, and, you know, a gay media is no different in that regard.
Ronnie, tell us a bit about your remark, your comment earlier that you were not necessarily out, but that it was kind of not important. Are you saying that your friends and family knew, but it wasn't something that you publicized? Is that what you're saying by that?
I got my first boyfriend when I was 20 years old, and my friends knew, my fraternity brothers in college knew, and I mean, you're talking Oklahoma, which is Bible country, and only, you know, one of my fraternity brothers had a problem with it. I never, you know, it's hard, like, I know the statement will probably upset a lot of people, but so many times, and I think everybody has their own journey, I definitely want to preface it with that, but my journey didn't mean that I had to wave a rainbow flag, and it didn't mean that I had to go up and announce it right away. And I think that it's just as we do need the people who their journey takes them to wave the flag, and their journey takes them to put a sticker on their car, and that's how they celebrate their pride, and I have the utmost respect for that. I do. I just think it's also nice, because there will be those close-minded people that will judge you right out the gate. Just because they see something rainbow, they have a preconceived notion, and I can tell you in my day I've just met so many people that I've become friends with that it just, my sexuality was, it just didn't enter into the conversation of our friendship in the beginning of it. You know, if we were tennis buddies or if we were whatever, we were workout partners. And I think it was nice that they got to know me as Ronnie, and then it just comes up in conversation naturally. I think my journey for myself was I want to be treated equal. I do believe in gay marriage. I think we should have that. I feel very strongly about that. But I think it, just as it does take the people who are willing to go out there and march for our rights, it does take the people who go on their own path and, you know, maybe change one mind at a time, which, you know, then that person can change one other mind. And so I wasn't out in terms of, like, Wilson Cruz came out right after my so-called life. He, you know, made a public statement saying I'm gay, and he was playing a gay character. And I mean, Wilson's such an amazing man. But not, that's just not everybody's journey. I think part of it too was I never felt famous enough that I had to issue a statement. I just, honestly, I didn't think anybody cared. And then it wasn't until I had a home improvement show on Lifetime, which was hosted by Lisa Rinna, that one of my producers knew, and they had basically asked me to do something else for the run of the show.
I'm sorry, I missed that. There was a glitch. They basically asked you to do what, Jason? They basically asked you to do what, Ronnie?
To shut my mouth during the run of the show, to not give an interview and say I was gay because I was the on-air carpenter of the show. And, of course, that's like the one role that's supposed to be, quote-unquote, like the sexy, hunky person. And, you know, Lifetime is television for women, and we were on at 7 p.m., so it's definitely geared towards a certain demographic. And I don't think the show would have been as popular if their on-air carpenter was gay. And I never issued a statement saying I was gay, but I also never pretended that I was straight. I never, you know, pretended to have a girlfriend. You know, it's just the media will always make assumptions, which is unfortunate. I remember reading in a tabloid, there's a TV show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and there's a girl that was on it. Her name is Claire Kramer, and I trained her, and she was one of my very best friends, and we would go out to events and people would write that we were dating, which, I mean, obviously wasn't further from the truth, and you can't get a tabloid to retract the story. It's just not going to happen.
Well, Ronnie, let me say that I wholeheartedly agree with you with the things that you're saying. In fact, it is very unfair that LGBT folks are expected to identify themselves as LGBT and then identify themselves as a person. After all, heterosexuals don't have to walk into a room, for example, first declare that they're heterosexual and then let people get to know them. It does not work that way, yet it's expected of us, and yet people take great delight in trying to unravel those things that are really none of their business. I completely understand where you're coming from, and I respect that, and I at least that's my view on it.
Well, thank you. Like, so if anybody's listening, it's not meant to be offensive. It's just I respect everybody's personal journey. That just happened to be mine, because I did make a statement like that once before, and I did get some really angry letters, and I think it's just that statement could be misinterpreted. People can choose to hear what they want to hear on it, but you know, I would just say this to anybody that does take offense to it is, you know, you have asked for acceptance and coming out on your terms, so you have to let other people do it in their way as well. And mine was just, my way of doing it was just, you know, living as myself. And I have gotten so many people, when they've heard that have sent me in letters and said, oh, my God, that's me too. And just like you have, like, maybe a more effeminate 16-year-old living somewhere in Nebraska and sees somebody come out in a very public way, and they're just so excited because then they don't feel alone. There are some other, maybe more masculine guys that just, excuse me, don't know where they fit in, and then they'll like listen to an interview I do, and then they'll be like, oh my God, I totally relate to that, and thank you so much, because I didn't know where I fit in. We as a community, as a gay community, as much as we scream that we hate labels and we hate being boxed up, I think sometimes we're our own worst enemy. We're so quick to label each other and define each other, masculine, feminine, top, bottom, like all these ridiculous words, instead of just being, you know, Peter or Ronnie or James or Gary or whoever.
Well, you know? Again, I completely agree with you. I'm wondering, well, let me begin here. It was something that you mentioned in one of the initial emails that you sent, I believe, via the MySpace carrier. Let me say that, you know, obviously I go out to a lot of news sources to pull together the show. Often it's very politically oriented. And some of the sites I go to are like Bay Windows and Queerty. Now, I understand that you were you were outed publicly and in a very cheap way. By at least one of these sources, and in fact, I'm a little bit disgusted by this, because it's you know, some line about a reliable source tells Bay Windows that blah 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 you're having an affair with somebody blah blah blah, and that you're not out, like it's a huge secret. I'm actually disturbed by this. I'm almost not even ever going back to those sites anymore. How did this occur, and what, how did it impact you? Were you playing the carpenter at the time, or would you rather not go into this?
No, I would absolutely love to go into this. It was last year, actually, this happened, last summer. Merge was off the air. We got canceled, on our third season. And I was in Chicago for, it was actually Gay Pride Week, and John Amici, who, is a retired basketball player. He's a Hall of Famer, just an amazing, amazing man. John and I happened to be at the same bar in Chicago, which was a gay bar, and I didn't even know him. I happened to be standing by him. And John is 6'10". He's this enormous towering guy, and I'm just over 5'8". So I said, excuse me, can I get to the bar? And he leaned down and said, what? And, you know, it's the age of technology, so somebody got happy with the camera phone, and then it looks like I've seen the photo, it looks like he's reaching down to kiss me, but it's just absolutely not the case. And so I guess it's like 3 days later, and I'm walking down the street, and my cell phone starts going off, and I get all these text messages, and my agent's calling me, and my manager's calling me, and they tell me it's all over the internet, and some fairly reliable web pages picked it up, like I think it's called Towel Rod. I'm not sure if that's the name of it, but which normally reports pretty
Yes, I'm familiar with the site, and normally they don't do the slander and gossip bit. No, you're absolutely right.
Exactly. And, I mean, Billy Masters picked up the story, who is, he does, like, this gay gossip column, which is, I can't even begin to tell you how many little of those little gay trash rags in each city that carry his column, he put that in there. And the Perez Hilton puts it up on his site, and then in print, like OK Magazine put it in their thing. I remember being on the Stairmaster at my gym, and this girl next to me opens up her magazine, and she's like, "Is this you?" I had about a heart attack, and I didn't even know John. So it was, the article read that we were, and I quote, "preparing to merge," which was some retarded play on words of the show I was on, and that John had come out and he was like the ambassador of the gay pride parade in Chicago.
Well, I've read the article, and in fact the article implies that John has every right to be in that club because he's come out. However, they imply that you do not have any right to be in that club because you publicly haven't stated on a billboard. I think that's outrageous.
Well, it kind of freaked me out because, you know, like I said, I wasn't out, but I wasn't in. I was just me. And then you have this news source reporting that I'm gay. And the worst part was my community, the people that you would think would either, A, question it was true. I wrote Billy Masters an email saying, you know, you could find me on MySpace. You know how to get a hold of my agent or my manager. You didn't even call and ask if this was true. I would have told them, yes, I was in a gay bar. Yes, John Amici was there, but instead somebody just ran the story. And then the worst part was, in print tabloids, it's not so bad. They're thrown away in the week, and next week it's Jessica Simpson or Brittany or whatever it is, or somebody else. But on these online ones, they're around forever, and people can actually comment on them. So,
yes, I've seen a few of the comments. I'm highly disgusted by them.
I've read everything from that I was HIV positive, which is inaccurate, to that I've done steroids, to John and I are in a full-fledged relationship, to the next week I was linked to Lance Bass, to T.R. Knight, poor T.R., also having a lovely outing experience, to then getting a phone call from, and I won't mention his name, but I'm sure most people know who it is. He was on Survivor and then went on a reality show, and I was having, I did a fitness series called Flab to Fab, and we were having the big premiere for it in L.A., and this person's manager called me and wanted me to bring them and hold hands with them on the red carpet. And it was just so disgusting because I said, well, but I've never met this gentleman. I don't know that I would take him to a premiere as my date. And they likened it to where Victoria Beckham and David Beckham were famous on their own, but when they were together it was a powerhouse, and how this would be just great for my career. And so I think it's just amazing on so many different levels how you see our community being so supportive with things like, you know, PAWS, where people are helping those with HIV take care of their animals, to just being animals themselves and tearing open their own community, just, you know, further brutalizing, you know, an already bad story. And people don't understand how much it can really impact you. If you're dating somebody, it's hard for somebody else who's not in the business to pick up a tabloid at the check stand and read that you're dating somebody. You know, it just affects you on so many other levels where, you know, people will sit at home and just be crass and, you know, just add fuel to the fire. Oh, yeah, I know my friend from my friend from my friend, and he saw Ronnie kissing so-and-so, and next thing you know, then there's a story of how Lance Bass and I were together. You know, they'll try and just link you to every gay person out there. And all I wanted to do was just, and you can't, obviously, you have to ignore it, but I just wanted to write back. That's not even the gay celebrity I was with, you know? But you can't.
Roddy, I have to tell you. I have to let it slide.
You do. You have to let it slide. And but it's funny because here we are. It's like 8 months later, and I should actually thank whoever wrote the story because there's a website called Connections, and John and I actually talk all the time on there. So John's actually going to be in Colorado this week, which is where I am right now. So you know, I mean, I should thank whoever did it. So if you're listening, thank you, because now John's a buddy of mine, and that would have never happened.
Well, another aspect of this is not only is it implied that you're not out in a gay bar. It's implied that you are trying to hide the fact that you're sneaking around in the bar. That's implied very clearly that not only are you gay and haven't told anyone that you are in fact sneaking around. And but John didn't have any problem being there. And then there's all the comments trying to get into your accusing you of having HIV. They accusing you of what nude posing somewhere or another, and it just goes on and on. And
I would love to see those photos. If I'm nude, gosh, I'd like to see them. You know, I think every actor out there has had their head photoshopped on somebody else's body, which is great. I hope they give me a fantastic body, and I hope they, you know, gave me a guy who was packing heat downtown. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, you know, I guess a lot of it may actually be envy to a degree. Apparently you've modeled for Abercrombie and Fitch and Eddie Bauer and that sort of thing. But nonetheless, it's mean-spirited, and I think it's very tacky. It's a violation of your personal life. So there are several very good questions coming from the chat room that I want to ask you. We have a live chat room that runs as the show progresses and people ask questions. One of the first questions was wondering what your thoughts were about the term gay marriage rather than just the term marriage. Do you how do you feel about that? You had made some statements about just being a person. Have you given that any thought?
Yeah, sure. I say gay marriage because we're, you know, it's made such a big deal when certain states allow us to. But ultimately, I feel it's the same as marriage. It's marriage. It's just between two guys. If I found the right guy, we'll go to Canada if we have to get married. I'm down with that. And I mean, I definitely want to foster kids and, you know, have that's my path. It's not for everybody. But when I say gay marriage, I don't mean it to exclude lesbian couples. I just couple that all together. I can't just call it marriage because, you know, I'm in Colorado right now, and I can't go get married to, you know, anybody that I want to. I'm not sure if that really answers the question or if...
Yes, it does. Ronnie, there's another line of questioning. As you know, society likes to refer to us always as homosexuals. There's always the term our predators. It's always some sort of out-of-control sexual thing. When we're referred to, the fact that the line that's typed here in chat is gay man out of control sex machine sort of thing. Did you get a whiff of that regarding what was published on those websites that not only were they, that what they were really, really saying is you're just another gay man, you know, sexually out of control? Did you feel that?
Absolutely.
That you're not.
It was in a matter of 2 weeks from that, I had read articles, that I had been dating / sleeping with, and the list went on and on and on, and I think it was just a matter of, I think the only person they probably didn't link me to was Riken. Other than that, it was every gay person, and people would have photos of us together, but when you live in LA, you know, there are just, you know, it's a small world out there. You are friends with certain people when you know you're in the same industry. You're going to see the same people at casting calls. It doesn't, if you have coffee, it doesn't mean you're dating. It doesn't mean you're getting naked together. It just means that sometimes you're just having coffee, you know.
Well,
but
yes, I do.
And then everybody that's ever fancied you decide that they're going to say that they've been with you, which is very funny because if you knew me and my friends, which of course are not around, could testify, I have less intimate relations than any one of my friends. I could tell you in the past year and a half I've had sex twice. So I mean that doesn't really count as promiscuous in my book. So
well, it certainly doesn't count as out of control. That's for darn sure. Someone, by the way, has suggested that you be elected national gay spokesman, but which I don't think is a bad
well,
idea.
Well, thank you.
But,
that's nice. I would take them up on it.
And there's another line of thought here. We're so used to seeing celebrities trashed in the on the grocery market aisles and this sort of thing. Was it just a huge shock to you? Did you think that? I mean, how did you perceive this? You know, the line between your public, your personal life, and everybody's fascination with how did it hit you? Because I'm getting the distinct impression you didn't feel that you were like high enough up the ladder to get bashed like that. I'm lost here. How did that feel?
It's well, going into that business, the trade-off is. You give up part of your personal life. There will come a point in time, depending upon your career path, that people will or won't talk about you. A perfect example is a good friend of mine. Her name is Julie Benz. I mean, if you look at her resume online, this woman has been in everything. She's just a phenomenal lady. She just did the new Rambo movie. She's on the TV show Dexter. She was on Buffy. She played Darla on Buffy and Angel. She was in Jawbreaker, she was on Roswell, according to Jim, she's been in everything. She's one of the most quote-unquote famous people that I have a very good relationship with, but no tabloids ever write about her. Just, she's married, her husband is John Cassier, he's the voice of the Crypt Keeper. Nobody ever writes about her for some reason, I don't know why. And then you have somebody like, you can go the exact opposite route, like, Claire Kramer, who's on the same show, but just because her character, she was the bitchy blonde girl in Bring It On, and she was the same type of character. She played Glory in Buffy. She gets people love to talk about her. So you don't get to pick when they're going to talk about you. I think you joke going into the industry. Oh God! If I'm in the tabloids, or if they write about me, then it's great. But the reality is, it's different for everybody. And I don't know that it was for me. And you can't choose to separate it. It's really not up to you. It's what the public decides to do with it.
Yeah, I do. How did John react to all of this? Have you talked with him about it?
We did talk about it. Actually, we talked about it fairly recently. We laugh about it because he's quite notable as well, and you just don't believe what you read. Like, there wasn't even, like, I didn't sit there and think, oh, I wonder if John posted this. I didn't even think John knew who I was, and the first time we talked, I think his first line to me was, oh, you're that celebrity guy from the Home Redo show. John probably, reacts the same way I do to it. I can't speak for him, but, looking back now, we get a good chuckle out of it, but, it's a great lesson. I've definitely learned to stop Googling my name, or somebody says, "Oh, there's the story about you." I don't read it. It's really hard because I'm just nosy. I love to see what people are saying. They created a Yahoo group, and for a while I joined under a fake name just to read write about me. And then I remember somebody wrote the most awful thing about me in a fan group. It was like, I don't know, like Ronnie Kerr is the epitome of a B-movie actor lacking charisma, and going on, and it was like this big paragraph, and I just thought, gosh, this will be the last one I ever read. Like, I can't read these anymore because it's detrimental. You know, it's hurtful, and like, how, oh God, what a loser are you? You're going into somebody's whatever, somebody likes my work enough to create a fan group, and you're going to go in there just to talk smack. So after a while, you just have to consider the source and let it go, and, you know, and then choose to focus on the positive. Like, I got this letter, this handwritten letter from this guy in Singapore who loved Regarding Billy, and he just said, you know, it's so hard for him, to get those types of movies over there, and so you can focus on those more positive letters.
I completely agree. One last question before we move on to another area, and that is, have you considered any legal action, or is that an option regarding the sites of the tabloids? Is that a possibility?
There's really no legal recourse. They have to state it as a fact, and I mean, you're going to be as petty as them and drag it out. Like, karma is going to get whoever. So what are you going to do about it? You just take it with a grain of salt and learn from it, and you know.
Good point. I guess, and it all came as the article referred to. This all came from a quote reliable source, and it caused all of this. Ronnie, I want to ask you how this has impacted the acting in the movies. This happened last year, and I seem to recall you made a statement that you were kind of taken aback by it, and sort of just took a little time to like reeling from it. How has it impacted? And I realize too that you're going toward personal training. You apparently have something called Outlicious TV, a series there. Flab to Fab? I don't know about these things, but do you see yourself moving away from the entertainment because of this incident? I would hate to lose you, but by the same token, you're checked in with all these people, the various initials that I read earlier in the program,
lots of letters after the name.
Yeah, right. All those. Where are you now? How are you handling this, and what are you going to do, and what's up with the movies?
I have recently relocated to Denver, Colorado. Two of my really good friends live out here from Jersey, and I did do the fitness series Flab to Fab, which was directed by a man named Brian Pelletier, who's just amazing. But since being out here, I've taken a job doing PR, which of course every actor knows how to do, with a company called Genesis Fitness. I actually just gave an interview with Gay Wired about my coming out, and, you know, willing to say on the record, as I think, you know, there are just certain people in certain outlets that are just chomping at the bit, been waiting for this past 8 months for me to actually say I'm gay. So it looks like I will actually be writing a fitness column for them.
Cool, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, and I see myself doing more of that. If Jeff London were to call me up and say, hey, I want to work with you again, I would work with Jeff just because I have a good relationship with him. The same thing with, like, Anthony Kane, who I did Sinful with, and, you know, if Damien Deetz, who's just amazing. If you guys don't know who Damien Deetz is, definitely Google him. He's just a genius, that guy. But I don't really see myself being in the grind of auditioning every day. I think it's just, I have a great platform now where I have a big enough fan base that I can start to promote fitness and people will listen. The heart of it is, like, my dad actually passed away this morning at 8:08 a.m. of a heart attack.
Ronnie, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. He had diabetes and was overweight. And so now I have this, especially through Fab to Flab, it's amazing. If you Google it, like, people just have it, like, little videos of it posted on their MySpace. And so I just think I have this great opportunity to use my celebrity, if you will, which I don't know, I feel silly saying that word, to really just target people getting fit. And I mean, it's just such an amazing thing. You know, when you have fame of some sort behind you, you really have the power to send a message, and it just depends. Are you going to, you know, send a message to be a teenage party girl and go drinking at the clubs, or what are you going to use with that? And for me, it's still an entertainment. I'm still, I think it's Flats at That is definitely a really entertaining show. And be able to use it to touch people and get fit, and I get, you know, just these great letters from people around the country who have watched the show and, you know, have started to exercise, or they'll just send me an email saying, hey, I walked for an hour today and you inspired me to do that. And to be inspiring to do that, like, who could ask for a better job than that, to know you're changing somebody's life, that maybe now they're going to add another year or another 5 years onto their life. That's phenomenal.
Well, Ronnie, not to dwell on it, all of us in the chat room also expresses our deepest sympathy. We're so sorry to hear about your father, and I'm amazed that you're. I mean, it just gives me a whole new respect for you that you're able to maintain as well as you're maintaining. One would have not known that had you not said that, and we're all deeply sorry, sir.
Well, it's been a long day, but thank you. Like with anything, you know, it's just a gamut of emotions. At Genesis, my boss, and definitely I can call him a friend, his name is Garth, we just kind of didn't do anything at the gym today, and we went to a different gym and worked out and just, you know, de-stressed. And I have a great, you know, friend here in Denver that are just an amazing support group. And it's, you know, it's just, it is what it is, and if nothing else, it hits home a little bit harder, because I can say, maybe I can, you know, be able to help somebody change their path so that doesn't happen to them. You know, that's what I really hope to get out of it all, whether it's writing the column or doing another season of Flap to Fab, or, you know, picking up a new show or whatever it is, like, to inspire people to get fit. And getting fit does, you know, for anybody listening, does not mean you have to have an 8-pack and big biceps. And, you know, if anybody has seen my picture, they know that I am built a little bit bigger, but so much of it is genetics. And it's great when you help somebody get, like, the arms that they want to fill out their T-shirt to go to the beach. That's great, but it's just more amazing when you have somebody say to you, Ronnie, I was able to tie my shoes standing up today, and I haven't done that in 15 years.
Wow.
You know, I woke up today without pain in my back for the first time. Like, those are just amazing things. I wasn't going to go to the gym today, but I watched, you know, another episode of Flap to Fab, and, you know, I heard you telling them to get off their butt and do it, and I listened to you, and I got off my butt. Like, so many people joke about Richard Simmons, and, you know, they choose to pick on him and call him names, but if you look at it, what he has done is nothing short of absolutely amazing and inspiring. You can't help but, you know, respect the guy. Like, he's changed millions of people's lives. You know, he really has, so you have to just love that guy for doing that.
Ronnie, how does one become involved with the Flab to Fab program? Do you subscribe? Do you get videotapes, CDs, DVDs? Tell us about how all that works.
That actually all goes through my producer. I think if anybody, you know, gosh, I don't even know when we're starting up season two, but I would tell anybody if they have a fitness question or whatever. I mean, when I canceled my MySpace page not too long ago, I had like 3,500 people on there, and I did my darndest to answer everyone personally. I just put it back up. So if they do send me an email, I will absolutely email everybody back, and I can tell you there is an imposter on there. So there's a Ronnie Kerr imposter, which I guess I'm flattered about. But my actual address is myspace.com. Backslash Kerrani. So Kerronnie. So if it's not that, and you're actually listed as my top friend, so if you go onto my page and you see the show, then you will know you're at the right Ronnie Kerr and not some other one.
Bless your heart.
And all I have to say, dude, is whoever has that, you should have picked a more famous person than myself to impersonate.
Oh, that's wonderful. The strictly confidential seal of approval. The producer is asking, perhaps you'd like to become the fitness consultant for all of us talk hosts who just sit and talk.
I'll give you a little exercises you can do at your desk while you're chatting away. People would be surprised what you can do while you're just sitting there to get a little workout. Don't kid yourself. But it's great. Like, you know, my buddy James has recently started going to the gym with me, and that's just fantastic. You look at somebody who's, you know, we'll say he's 35, just in case he's listening. So he's 35, and now he's starting to go to the gym. And, I mean, that's exciting when you can help somebody do that. And it's exciting to have, you know, to help those people. I get excited by it. And it's nice to get the letters about regarding Billy or sister, which seems to pop up all the time. But it's even more amazing when somebody's really, you know, started to change their life for the better.
Well, Ronnie, getting back to regarding Billy just briefly, I happen to locate it on Netflix. Now, is that commonly available? Can you get it at Blockbuster? Is it available through rental outlets? Because truly, there are going to be people who are looking for this after we've talked about it. They may not know where to find it. We have talked about it a lot, and it is worthy of a long discussion, I'm about to say.
I know you can get it on Blockbuster online. I don't think you can get it in the store. You can get it on Netflix and Amazon. I think like Virgin or Tower or I don't know. You know, I know you can get it online. I would say that's the easiest. Go online, eBay. People are always selling stuff on eBay. You can get it cheaper than. I've made my share of residuals off it, so get it on eBay and save yourself some money. I hope people like it. If you're looking for something, you know, definitely heartwarming. And people always call it a Christmas movie, though. It's always called a Christmas movie, and it's definitely, I mean, nothing is more than
well, it just happens to end at Christmas, for crying out loud.
There's a whole other year that goes on during that film, but
what's the Christmas movie? It's touching it. I love the, you know, the stocking is a whole bit, but it's not a Christmas movie, kid. No way.
I know, but when you read the reviews, you're like, this is my favorite Christmas movie, and I'm always like,
oh,
Christmas
Christ.
Movie.
Ronnie, let me ask about the possibility. Do you still get feelers from time to time about doing another movie? I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Regarding Billy 2 or any number of other films.
You know what's funny Jeff wanted to do a sequel to it, and Jason, Jack, and myself said absolutely not. We definitely did not want to do it. I just didn't, with that movie in particular, I just didn't see where the story could go. The original plot of the sequel was going to be about, and this is why I didn't want to do it, was going to be that the brother, who's mentally challenged, was going to have a crush on another boy at his mentally challenged school, and I didn't want to make a gay movie for sake of making, you know, another gay themed movie where all of a sudden the brother's now gay. You know, I just didn't want to do that. Another movie. I actually I wrote a script myself called Population One, which has just been optioned. So, I mean, I'll definitely work on the production side of that. I don't know if I will act in it, basically because it's all of my dating shenanigans, and it's true. So, but all the names have been changed. So, I'll be involved in that, and The 49th Line comes out this year. So there's other stuff going on, but I'm more in talks to do another fitness series right now, so I think that's probably more what I'll do is I'll be doing more fitness shows and fitness consulting. I mean, I was working in L.A. training just a ton of celebrities, and I see myself doing more of that than just making more mainstream films. I the one nice thing about doing the fitness consulting and writing the article is, like, I found, you know, I just found, like, a great job here in Denver, and I just, you know, I love it, so I don't want to give that up either. I mean, obviously you can't do everything, but I'm definitely going to try. Have my hands in every cookie jar.
Ronnie, when we were setting up scheduling the other evening, you said that you had to be on set last night. Is that the set of the Fab to Fab, or was it the 49th line? What is it that you're doing now?
It's not. I had to do a photo shoot for the Gay Wired interview that I just gave. They wanted something with a little more skin, speaking of which. So they wanted something a little bit, I don't know, visually appealing.
I see. Well, if you decide to submit any photos to us, we'll accept them fully clothed.
All right. That's good. Thanks.
One thing I've noticed in looking through your credits, you've also produced some things. Is that something of interest to you, or are you going to be producing again?
I would, if the right project came along. I'll definitely produce. I don't know if I'll executive produce, but I'll definitely produce Population One. And, you know, if there was, like, you know, there, I think there's some amazing writers out there who just don't know what to do with what they've written. They don't know how to produce it. So if I wound up, you know, getting my hands on something that I just think is great, I would definitely, pick up that ball and run with it. It just depends, you know, you always look for the right project, you know, and in the meantime, it's funny because, like, a good friend of mine, Charlene Tilton, she, you know, everybody knows her from one show, and they don't realize that, you know, you don't want to just jump into something else just because you can. When, you know, if you have a little bit of luxury to look for something good, it's so much more rewarding, you know. It is. So I would produce, I would act again, I would do those things if I found the right project. So I guess I would just leave it at that. Like, if the right project came along, and I still talk with a lot of the filmmakers I've worked with, and we decide if it's going to be a good project. For a while, I was working out so hard, I was actually going to compete in bodybuilding, and I was 242 pounds, and I was just too big to be in anything. You would get on camera, and they'd be like, "This is not going to work." So I think, you know, I just wanted to pursue that for a while, and, you know, I always want to say, oh, I did this and I've done it. And so now that I'm a little bit more of a normal size, at, like, you know, 205, I think I could do something again if the right script came along. So, like, with everything, it's the right fit, you know.
I understand.
You
know? Well, in looking at some of your photographs today, your body had changed radically from Billy. Billy bulked up, and so you're going back in the opposite direction a little bit to let it equalize. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I'm fickle that way. Like, I want to do it all, whether it's act, produce, run a gym, train people, do a fitness show. I want to play tennis. I want to, you know, go hike a mountain. I want to go swimming. I want to weightlift. You know, you can't do it all, but you can definitely try, you know. That's all it is. So everything in life, just like clothing, it's cyclical. So, you know, I always wanted to be really big, and I was, and, you know, I found out it wasn't for me. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm trying to find, you know, a happy place, I guess, where I'm comfortable with my body and I like it, and, you know, hopefully I'll find somebody to date and they'll like it.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask. Is there a Mr. Kerr in the future? Do you have you're not dating anyone? That's, you know, a young fellow like you, being in your 30s, you really should just settle down. Take it from an old guy, okay?
I would love to be dating, honestly. But, you know, dating's tough. It's hard, you know. Dating was really hard when I was really involved in entertainment, because you just didn't know what people's motives were. And I actually was meant to go on a date here in Denver, and I got stood up. So, you know, it happens to everybody. If you're listening, it's not just you. It happens to me. It happens to everybody. The problem is you go out to a bar and if people know what you've done, they'll do the finger point, but most people won't come up to you, and it gets frustrating with having to go up to somebody that you like. So I would say to anybody listening, if you like somebody, go up to them because they're probably just waiting. You know, but no significant other, no boyfriend, no husband, no nothing.
Well, those of you who would like to apply, you can email Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I will forward the mails right along to
there
our guest.
There you go. Very nice. I mean, I do. There are people that I have my eye on, but I don't suppose Christopher Maloney is interested in leaving his wife and dating me anytime soon.
Ronnie, I have to tell you, you are a most remarkable person. Your spirit and your energy, and considering all that's happened to you regarding your career, and in fact, Ronnie, just what's happened to you today, you're a very impressive young man, and we deeply appreciate having you on the show. Are there some things that we have missed talking about that you want to tell us about current projects that we have not covered?
I would just say, I know from this, having announced that my dad has passed away, I know I'll get a lot of emails of people wanting to send flowers or whatever, but I would really say if you wanted to buy a bouquet of $30 worth of flowers, like, go find your local, you know, animal rescue organization or shelter and give it to them, give it to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, give it to something that means something to you, because I just think flowers will die, and I mean, if I could, you know, ask for people to do something, that's what I would definitely ask for them to do. My favorite one, honestly, is one that I volunteered with in L.A., which is Ace of Hearts. You can find it at www.acesangels.org. It's run by Kerry Whitman. Just an amazing organization. And, you know, every year at my birthday party, you can't come into my party unless you either bring a donation for animal rescue or if you bring, like, something for the dogs or the cats to have. So that would be, you know, the only thing I think we haven't covered that I would really like to throw out there is do something, you know, for some great charity. And my favorite one is just animal rescue. I just think animal rescues are amazing.
That certainly touches my heart. In fact, I noticed in some of the information today that you were active in supporting humane societies and animal shelters. Did your dog, the references said you have, did the dog come from one of the shelters?
You know what? Don't believe everything you read online.
okay.
I don't own a dog named Ava.
Okay.
I did the movie The Aviator. I was an aviator, and somebody decided to, you know, like, that's the thing about IMDb. People can, you know, they can just write on there, like, whatever their heart desires. And, again, you know, I don't currently have a pet. I did, though, find a really cool dog, which I would never get, but it's called a Klee Kai. Now, that's going to get Googled, like, a million times. But they're miniature Siberian huskies. I think they're awesome. But you have
cool.
to get them from a pointer. That's just not my thing. I'd rather go rescue some mutt. That just, you know, wants a little bit of attention.
Funny, I take it then your nickname is not Cur Dog, is it? They say on the internet either.
You know what? Now, see, that is actually true.
Okay. How did you get Cur Dog?
You know,
you gotta know.
I guess believe some of it, believe half of it. I don't know. Be picky about what you believe. Because it's definitely not all true. Some of it is, you know, that's true. My name is Cur Dog. I think, like, a Cur Dog is supposed to be, like, this mean little dog that finds maybe that was indicative, like, when I was, like, 25, but I'm 33 now, so I don't, I'm not really about the fighting anymore.
Well, Ronnie, I have to tell you that I can normally judge how well a guest is going over by keeping an eye on the chat room. And indeed, sir, you are loved. You have been called everything from really having it together to wonderful and great guest and excellent and wow. And it just they just love you. And I love you, too. And
well,
I would like
anybody that's actually taking the time to write that, I mean, I can't see it. I do have my computer on, but I don't know where to look for that. But thank you so much. I mean, it's really nice to feel supported like that. I appreciate it. You you know, you obviously didn't like to hear nice things about himself. I'd be lying if I didn't say otherwise. But it is nice to feel supported like that, especially on like a trying day like this. And I will just give like a big shout out to Garth and Gary and James. They've just been fantastic today. Really, you know, helped me through a rough spot. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ronnie. I've got to say that also we would love to stay in touch. We'd perhaps like to have you back at some point in the future as things develop for you, and I'll keep an eye out for you before I'm retired. And you're always a welcome guest and quite remarkable. I will remember this, and the guests will certainly remember you too. Ronnie, thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody, so much. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been fantastic. And, you know, like I said, if anybody has a fitness question, either find me on MySpace or, you know, send it into the show, and I know they'll forward it to me, and I would love to just help anybody. And it's not one of those things where I'm looking to charge you. Like, I'm just really hopefully I can help you and steer clear. And obviously I can't answer 12 of your emails a day, but I'll definitely do my best to help everybody. And thanks so much. It's really been great and nice.
Well, thank you, Ronnie. And I should point out to you that at the show's website, which is strictly strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Larry, if you'd stop by there, you're listed on today's calendar date. The calendar is right there on the front page at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And your MySpace page is linked there. Just double-check that for us to be sure we have it linked to the right MySpace page. If not, please email me. We'll correct it.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much. I'm sure you do. Website. Oh, I'm clicking on it right now. Let's go find out.
Yes.
I don't know where I'm looking. I'm not like the best computer person. You're going to find that out. Oh, it is linked, right. Yeah, there we go. You're awesome.
Yeah. Is it the correct, if you click on your name, is that the right page then?
It is the right, that's the real me. That's not the, the fake me.
Okay.
So.
Didn't want to get that wrong this early in the game. Ronnie, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and have a wonderful evening, sir, and God bless you and your family in this time.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and thank everybody out there for me. And I guess that's it, and I hope you all have a great Friday night.
Thank you, Ronnie. God bless. Good evening to you, sir. And my friends, that was Ronnie Kerr, K-E-R-R, and at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you will find a link to the right page that will take you to his real MySpace page. Also, in today's calendar date, you will find a link to the movie regarding Billy, and links to some fitness operations there. That various links for, and we'll have the show archive posted by tomorrow sometime. And see if the archive will be there. If you have a friend that you'd like to hear the show, you can always come back and send them to the archive. So let's see. That was remarkable. Tell you what, let's do. Not going to bother to try to run a break at this point in the show. So what we're going to do is head on over to the gay bar across the street. And before we head over there, I want to tell you a little story. Now, I'm sure I have it here. Now, today's gay bar across the street segment is courtesy of Mr. Bobby Vittoretti. And I need to tell you a story about this segment. This particular audio you're going to hear this evening from Bobby Vittoretti is from 1977. This is from Bobby playing live in 1977 at Fort Lauderdale's Marlin Beach Hotel. Now, in order for you to understand the significance of that, I have to tell you what Fort Lauderdale's Marlin Beach Hotel, what that means. It's beautiful. It's right on the beach. The open ocean is right there, the sand, the palm trees, the whole bit. And it's really the place that caused so many gay men to move to Fort Lauderdale in the 70s and the 80s. You know, we've done a lot of news about Fort Lauderdale and the mayor and the scandal and the tourist dollars that come from gay tourism. Well, the history goes all the way back. During the 70s and 80s, the Fort Lauderdale's Marlin Beach Hotel, it was very, very busy in the wintertime, not so much in the summertime. They had famous tea dances that happened in the afternoons, I think around 4 o'clock. The poop deck was always packed with men every day during the 6-week spring break, which overlooked the ocean. there were stars going in and out of it all the time. The huge, for instance, Viola Will, Sharon Redd, Pamela Stanley, Two Tons of Fun, Sylvester. These are all huge dance music stars. They were in and out quite a lot. There was even the pool that you see the disco was in the basement. Okay, so the pool is of course on the ground. But the thing is you could swim to the bottom of the pool and look into the disco. There were windows. The side of the pool was glass into the disco, or the people in the disco could see the people swimming from the disco floor out. And in fact, if you'd look at the pool at night, you'd see all the lights and the flashing from the disco downstairs under the pool. It was quite amazing. The Marlin Beach Hotel unfortunately fell into disrepair. A lot of people, the trendy place to go to move to South Beach, so that's about 30 miles south. And so at this point in time, it is I'm sad to say, a Marriott. If I recall, let's see where it says here. It was a Marriott. But here's the cool thing, too, I need to tell you. From the disco, which is in the basement, there's this tunnel, this underground passage. So you can go from the disco in the basement. There's this tunnel, and it goes under the highway. You see there's a highway that runs directly in front of the hotel, then directly to the sand and the beach. So you could walk from the disco into the tunnel, under the highway, and come up on the beach. Is that cool or what? Fort Lauderdale's Marlin Beach Hotel. When I said Bobby Vinatieri played there in 1977, I'm telling you that they only had the very best DJs on the planet. And in fact, another DJ who played there is going to be a guest some point in the near future when we get that set up, a Mr. Robbie Leslie. But in any case, tonight's track is provided by Mr. Bobby Vinatieri, and it's from 1977. It's live from Florida's Fort Lauderdale Marlin Beach Hotel. And Bob, roll it. We'll be right back. as we arrive back from the gay bar across the street, I point out to you that that was none other than Mr. Bobby Vitteretti. His website is Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, Vitteretti.com. That's spelled B-O-B-B-Y, V-I-T-E-R-I-T-T-I. If you'd like to hear the original interview, Bobby was in the show. That was in December. Just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and look for December the 4th, and you will see a link to the audio archive with Mr. Bobby Vitteretti. He is what we call the Generation 1 DJs who actually pioneered it. That was back in the day when people would play 45s, and pick up a needle, and then put another record on. And this was an experimental part of our musical history. People were learning to mix and doing some wonderful things that nobody had ever heard before, and that all took place in 1977, this particular set, at Fort Lauderdale's Marlin Beach Hotel, which apparently was one of the most fabulous places on earth, as we learned. I have to tell you, that what a wonderful guest we had earlier. That I'm looking forward to getting that audio archive up tomorrow. What a delightful young man, very, very positive and confident, and he was a delightful guest. He certainly was. We're moving into the final minutes of the show. I want to tell you before, oft times I run up to the very end of the show and then have to run out of the room screaming, so I want to point out now while there's still time to tell you that tomorrow evening the Head On Radio Network has live programming. When the other so-called progressive networks are running reruns, we are indeed live. Please join us tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. for Matt Sowards. His news report is quite wonderful. Matt's been doing this for a good while. He's a young man, and he has a great point of view. You'll enjoy it. That's followed at 9 p.m. by our very own Billy Shears. Billy Shears' Night Sound starts at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network and runs till midnight. Billy Shears' music is quite difficult to explain to you because it's so eclectic. You will never know what the next track is going to be with Billy Shears. He has amazing musical commentary and insight into the music, and you'll hear and learn things about the musicians that you'll never know. In fact, I was thinking about Billy the other day. I think it was Thursday or Friday. I happened to be in the car. I was riding on listening to NPR, and the program called Fresh Air came on. And the person they were interviewing on Fresh Air, she was a photographer, and she was a photographer to the Beatles. And I had meant to tell Billy Shears about that, and I suppose I'm doing it now. He's in the chat room. Billy, if you'd like to hear that interview, not on Head On, but on NPR, it took place on Fresh Air, which I think it was Thursday. Yes, I'm fairly sure it was Thursday. I'm sure the archive is there at NPR. And, oh yes, followed by Billy Shears. Billy Shears show ends at midnight, and that will bring you up to Rick Goodner, who will be on at midnight tomorrow evening on Strictly Confidential at 12 midnight for Rick's Place. Rick is the horn shrink, and he has an amazing perspective of what's going on and why it's going on. I think you will enjoy that show, and the horn so desperately needs a shrink. That is, hey, we have to deal with so much. We have to tell you so many things that are disturbing that oft times by the time the end of the day rolls around, we're quite in need of a shrink. I need to tell you also that this is John's night off. In fact, in John's neck of the woods, which is Australia, it is already Saturday. So indeed, John takes Saturdays and Sundays off, which we highly encourage. So because of the time shift, John is not live with us. And so there will be no horn section this evening. Bob and I will take the evening off too. So there will be no horn section following Strictly Confidential at 11 p.m. There will be a replayed horn section, and then at midnight, John Fox show All Foxed Up will run, and it will be a repeat also, so I need to let you know that. One of our chat room folks that goes by the name of Mr. Lottie sent me a very, very interesting article late this afternoon. I thought it was divine justice. It was just wonderful. Thank you for sending it, Lottie. If you recall, we've been talking about the Reverend Ken Hutchison on several shows here lately. Of course, Ken is the prominent, and he's a legend in his own mind, actually, a prominent opponent of gay rights in Washington State. He is also the fellow who's hooked up with Watchmen on the Walls, which is hooked up with Sacramento, which is hooked up with Latvia, and it's a huge anti-gay movement. That is the only focus of the church. They are Cutcherson that came up with the idea of having everyone in the country, at least the fundamentalists, buy 3 shares of Microsoft stock and donate one of those shares to his church or to him personally. Actually, it says to him, not to his church, so that he can raise funds to fight Microsoft's positive gay rights issues within the organization, the various benefits and what have you that the employees enjoy at Microsoft. Of course, this would cost people across the country about $104 a piece. And what a scheme. Can you think of a better scam than having thousands and thousands of people send you 1 share of Microsoft? It's just amazing. I'm astounded by that level of deceit. You got to hand it to the guy. He's been talking to the devil. So anyway, he appeared at a high school yesterday. It was an assembly at Mount Si High School, S-I, and I believe that's the full spelling. I believe it's Mount Si. It's an odd name for a high school. In any case, it was set up by his daughter, actually set it up, and it's it was part of it was intended that he go there and honor Dr. Martin Luther King, and his daughter arranged it. She is a senior at the high school, and so he spoke about his experiences as a black man and began to get into his normal spiel. However, this time he didn't quite get away with it. He was booed very loudly and very longly by the Gay Straight Alliance at that high school. We know about Gay Straight Alliances. We've had both a student from Denver and the representative of one of the organizations that gets together these Gay Straight Alliances on the program in the past. The Gay Straight Alliances was asking him very pointed questions about his stance on LGBT folks. In fact, a school teacher even joined in and began asking questions during the period of time that Hutchison was supposed to speak. Hutchison said they made him feel embarrassed. Boy, payback's a bitch, isn't it, Hutchison? He was interviewed later in the afternoon by another organization about what happened at the high school, and he told them that he couldn't remember the exact question that was posed to him by the science or the Mount Si teacher. But it was shouted from the bleachers, from the back of the school and the gym, and it was along the lines of challenging him for claiming to admire Dr. King, but simultaneously being dismissive of the fight for equal rights for gays and lesbians in school. Hutchison said, I think her deal was that I don't believe in equal rights for everybody. Yes, Mr. Hutchison, I think that probably was what her deal was. A school could not be reached for comment. He called the confrontation in the assembly inappropriate. He said, I was embarrassed for my daughter because she was the one who planned the assembly. Well, let this be a lesson to you, daughter. Perhaps you shouldn't be bringing your bigot father in front of him, a high school, to preach his bigot hate. You know, get a clue. It's not hard to find one, my dear. I have no sympathy for you whatsoever. Hutchison said in the interview also that followed the high school incident, it was an assembly for kids for Martin Luther King, who pushed strongly for equality for skin color only. He was asked in the interview what the problem was, that there seemed to be a disconnect between the message of Martin Luther King, who's, by the way, the article points out, Dr. King's close advisor was Bayard Rustin, who is in fact gay, and that Dr. King led his own efforts to fight it for equal rights for gays and lesbians. So Hutchison was extremely upset with that, and he said, I guarantee you, my brother, you can say whatever you want to about Martin Luther King, but he was not fighting for people's rights in the bedroom. Do not go down that road with me. If you go down that road with me, you're going to get a fight. At that point, of course, he ended the interview, which is quite typical, wouldn't you say? He said he expressed an idea regarding the confrontation. He says, I take all that, I take it all the time, meaning the confrontation. I take it, it's part of my stand, that's what I take. He said, but when it starts affecting the kids that planned it, it affects my daughter, I think something should be done. I don't think it was respectful of the kids. Well, yes, when it affects your daughter, sir, perhaps you ought to rethink your bigoted position. He also opposed the school's upcoming... I'm just checking the time. Didn't want to miss that. But in any case, he was checking the school's upcoming events. And I'm going to close this out fairly quickly because, indeed, I always do run up to the very last minute. He said, I grew up in the South and I wasn't even a person. I was always three-fifths of a person, which, of course, he's referring to the three-fifths compromise, which was repealed in 1865. So, in fact, sir, all your life you have been a whole person. It is more like I, sir, an LGBT individual who is three-fifths. Get a clue. So, in closing, I would like to say thank you all for being here. Looking forward to talking to you again next week. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.
I got to tell you, I started thinking that song came to me when I saw the line about Dick Cheney fishing. Not that I've got anything against fishing. You know, you give a man a fish and you fed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, and you've given him an excuse to sit by the river with a beer in his hand for the rest of his life. On the other hand, give a man religion, and he'll starve to death praying for a fish. Let's see. Oh, why not? Oh, they quit on me. Too bad. No, I think about the number 4,000, what it means. How far would 4,000 bodies stretched end to end? Extend. Use a rough average of 6 feet, just for the fun of it. Well, that would be 24,000 feet. That would be 5 miles. A little less. 5 miles. That's from here up to the main road. 5 miles. One mile per year. Of course, the statistics don't indicate that it breaks down anything nearly like that. No.
Ask any musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on the horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to the Horn Section.
Well, that was interesting, and none of my doing. Welcome to the Horn Section, where anything technologically can happen at a moment's notice. It's about 1 minute past 11 here on the East Coast. John Fox, what time is it where you are?
Ah, it's just getting on 2 in the afternoon, mate. The next day.
You know, that's got to be tiring.
Trying to stay that far ahead of you, Bob, man. Yeah, I'm running all the time.
You know, I mean, the little... The,